Is it that look that's made you so passionate to see justice for others? What has been the provocation, in a way, that's brought you into being such an activist around social justice?
Yeah, provocation is a really good word here. You know, where did my journey start? Does it ever end? Is it something that's innate? Is it something that I created for myself? Is it something when I saw things around me, when I saw things weren't equal, you know, did it make me want to react? And I think there was definitely a sense of really, I really got sexism really young. I knew that I was different. I knew my sexual orientation made me different. So I got really being excluded and being an outsider really, really young. These were feelings that I grew up with. These were really, really deep. A real strong sense of, you know, I'm almost an island, but of course I'm not because I'm so community. But I am almost an island. It's like, yes, I'll just do it on my own. You know, yes, it's like I'll just, you know what, keep calm, carry on kind of thing. But I definitely got a very strong sense of just some of the stuff that was happening in society, in community, and the way that young women were treated. I could really see that, you know, in many ways, just not quite right. Yes. You know, from the washing up to being able to choose what to wear. You know, there was something about that that just felt innately oppressive for me. And that's something that had to, you know, communication, you know, you had to talk about it to get that realization. So there was something about that that was always there. That's not just within the context of the Asian community. Of course, you know, I grew up in that context. So it's sort of my lens and my view and my insight was in that community. But as I moved back, I began to see, I was like, this is the world over, the way that women are treated, the way that we are treated around sexual orientation. And now, you know, obviously that real lens onto, well, the invisibilization of bisexual people, the way that trans people are treated. You can't have equality but treat people unequally. That's not equality. And I really feel like that, you know, that thread runs through so much of what I do. And some of it, so much of it has been unconscious that when I begin to reflect on it, I'm like, oh gosh, yeah, I did that, you know, but so much of it has just been so unconscious. So I'm not even sure whether I could put my finger on the provocation.
Yeah.
I just definitely know that there has been so many things that I've chosen to do on a very personal level. It's not what's provoked me to do them. It's that they have been in themselves quite provocative as well. So it's a circle maybe. I'm provoked, I'm provocative, you know.
And what I hear also is this paradoxical experience, having a sense of difference. I am different. And at the same time, having an extended family, which is also supportive. And those two things sitting side by side. And I mean, for me, chosen family is a really important concept. And I don't know if that's something that is similar to this sense of extended family that you grew up with.
It's certainly replicated in our life now. Me and my wife, Dipti, we definitely have a chosen family and we definitely have an extended family in that. You know, Dipti grew up in Leicester, so also very much a part of an extended family in a community that basically was, you know, in 1972 kicked out of Uganda. But of course families went to Uganda as indentured labor, and being thrown out of Uganda and told to go back to India was just like an impossibility. And of course the British had basically set up that system of indentured labor, just a different way of talking about slavery, if you like.
So
in 1972, as you know, there was a mass migration of Ugandan nations to this country. So my wife's family are very much from that community. So both of us have got this very strong sense of family and community because of the communities that we grew up in. And yes, the concept of chosen family is really important to us. Now, what's really important for me to be able to express is just my own internalized lesbian phobia. And the fact that I grew up in a way where I was silenced, where I couldn't be out, where it was tricky to be out. And in an era, the 70s and the early 80s, with the best will in the world, we're going to have to be really honest about the fact that there was just lots of gay, lesbian, bi, trans phobia. It was palpable. It was evident in everything. It was, you know, coming out was really, really, really tricky for a lot of people. also the level of racism and Muslim phobia that existed then and exists now all over Europe and globally. There's something about it, in a way, unfortunately, it's going to go internal. It's just going to go internal. So we have to do quite a lot of work. We have to be quite out. We have to be quite bold. We have to be quite assertive about our identities. It might be that I might even personally be quite agnostic, but I grew up in an Islamic family. So I will advocate for the rights of Muslim LGBTQ people. I think it's a really important thing to do.
Yes.
You know, often in this space we talk about, I have the privilege to do it. Well, I don't know about privilege. It's a gift. I've got a gift to, you know, and I've got a gift to give back. I've got a gift in me and a gift to give back. And there's something about that. It's really important to, for me also to say, look, it took me a long time to be able to come out. You know, I thought my mum knew, and I think she definitely did know. When I was getting married, I explicitly said to my mum, my mum had known Dipti and I had been together for quite a long time by the time we got married, but we'd been together, gosh, I can't remember, but I think maybe 10 years or so. And my mum loved Dipti. But when I told her I was going to get married to Dipti, my mum was, I knew it, but does it have to be so public? Do you have to do this? And I said, I do have to do it so publicly, because it's taken me a long time to get here. It's taken me a long time to recognize that I am going to get married, and it is my right to get married.
Yes.
It's also an act of defiance, you know, in terms of community and in terms of society and in terms of people. And some people lobbied really hard for same-sex marriage. It wasn't my lobby.
Yes.
But I'm so appreciative of the fact that people did do that. If it reduces gay, lesbian, bi, transphobia in doing so, then I think that's absolutely super critical that we do this to this society. We have to mess it up in that way. But, you know, it took time. It took time for me.
Yeah.
And I would say that it took quite a lot of time for me to recognize that actually it was my right to have a child. It was my right to have a child. It took a lot of work in terms of my own internalized lesbian phobia, in, you know, that internalized stuff about what would it be like with same-sex mums.
I'd love to hear, just to take you back a few steps, what were the steps in coming to terms with your own internal lesbian phobia? How did you begin that journey? How did you make those steps? What was required of you? How did it look?
First of all, I had to recognize that it was going on. It took me the longest time to even know that it was going on. I was quite I grew up in an Asian community, in a Muslim community, and you know, children and parents in any society, there is some clandestine stuff that goes on. There are some secrets that we keep. And I would say perhaps slightly more exacerbated for a first generation migrated community, there's probably a bit more extremity within that sort of approach as well. Mm. So it took me a long time to recognize that, you know, I was lesbian phobic. I just kept a lot of my things secret. My relationships were secret. In fact, some of the relationships that I had, it was a secret for them as well. So it was easy not to be out. It was easy not to really let it show, although I can't believe that it didn't show. It was just so obvious, you know. If my child behaved like I did with some of my friends, I think it'd be pretty obvious. But I suppose when you're not looking or when you're not thinking it's there, it's just not there for you. And maybe that's, you know, how society works. Definitely, I would say, first of all, I had to recognize that it was going on, and it took some time, actually. And I think being with Dipti, who was really out, who came out to her parents at 17, and, you know, there was some tensions around that, but they certainly got over that, you know, with time. And it sort of, I suppose, but was I really out in Bradford? Was I really out with my family? You know, was I really out with my mum? So it took some thinking, actually. And I gut-wrenchingly remember the first time I recognised my internalised phobia and thought, shit, you fly me, I've got some work to do here. I've got to unpull all of this. I've got to unpick this. I've got to see what's gone on with society. I've got to go see what's gone on with my family. I've got to know what's going on for me and where this has all come from, and really begin to accept that this is in me and to turn that around. And I think that once that happens, there's a level of activism that comes through it. So I came and I did a lot of work around the women's movement. I did a lot of, well, not a lot of work, people have just done tremendous things. I did some work. I worked for the New Mason Women's Project, which is now London Black Women's Project. I worked around domestic abuse and sexual violence for most of my adult life. Mm. And in this journey of me and Dipti, I began to think about the importance of doing some work around lesbian communities and around recognizing that a lot of the work that we were doing, actually, you know, there's just a lot of lesbians that are involved in building refuges, making refuges, working in refuges, but actually they don't get that. You know, it's a lot of lesbian energy that's gone in there, but quite often don't talk about it. We talk about it as the women's movement. Yes. And it is, of course. But, you know, just that recognition of how much lesbian energy goes into making spaces for women and spaces that work for women. So I think it was just a lot of that, a lot of sort of putting it all together, placing it all together and thinking about actually to be, if you like, a catalyst. There was something that was, you know, a catalyst inside of me that was like, a moment, as I say, quite a knife through the ribs moment about, oh my gosh, it starts with me.
Oh, I hear that. Oh, that really touches me, hearing that.
So that's where I went, you know, just really getting it. And, you know, it might sound corny, but I would say the love of a good woman, really, you know, just like really, that was, you know, that was a modelling, that was showing me something, that was making me less like an island, that was making me think more about, actually, it is my right to get married, it is my right to want us to have a child, it is, you know, is my right to keep my faith. It is my right to stay in my community. Mm. It is my right to have a chosen family. These are all bits of my salient identity. And, you know, which shall I not be? I can't not be any of, I have to be all of those things. Mm. Which bit can I not, you know, do you want me not to be? It's not possible. So I just have to be them. I have to talk about them and I have to do them. Much about me is about the power of voice and the power of naming something and the power of just trying to, you know, people that are, in a sense, just have less agency to give that voice for them. And I felt, as I say, both privilege and, you know, I don't look at it as a privilege, I just look at it as a, you know, a gift I have to give.
Yes. And yeah, thanks so much for bringing your voice into these conversations, you know, to be part of this, because I feel it's been a really important part, certainly for the Rainbow Dads, for others to hear voices that might reflect, oh, it is possible for me to do this. It is possible for me to come out, to be a parent, to make the choices that are right for me. Yeah, I'm curious about the body. How was that in the mix? Was there also cultural complexities, perhaps, in that?
Yeah, interesting question. And I think, you know, context is everything, isn't it? It's like sexuality in lots of cultures, in lots of societies, exploring sexuality as a teenager is complex. It is it's anxiety provoking. Mm-hmm. It is confusing. It is wild and it is erotic. But it is more than anything very, very confusing. Mm. And also, you know, there's so much portrayal about how a woman's body should be and how we should be that, in a way, we've got quite a lot to unpack before we even begin to start, really. There's so much to unpack. There's so much to pull together. And also, you know, at that level, racism, understanding that as an Asian woman, in terms of how we're viewed as society, and certainly models were white, you know, and tall and slight. And I'm not any of those things. I promise you, I'm not white.